Moncrief on News Talk.
Time to bring some stories from other parts of the world, sorts of things you don't normally hear about, and the mainstream airwaves, at least in this country. Jonathan De Burka Butler is our guide once again. Good afternoon,
John. How are you getting on?
Right, Kenya we're going to go to first, and the weed is going to remain illegal there.
It is. That is the weed, or the ganja, as it's technically referred to by the many people who smoke it as part of their religious beliefs, because it brings them close to spiritualism and that kind of thing. And that, of course, is Rastafarians that we're talking about. So this is a court in Kenya which has dismissed a petition from Rastafarians in that country who were seeking to legalise cannabis use and cultivation, right? So the judge ruled that Kenya's laws banning cultivation, possession and use of cannabis do not violate their rights to freedom of religion, okay, which was actually, interestingly enough, guaranteed after a decision was made 7 years ago. There was a girl who went to school with dreadlocks, and she was expelled.
Yeah,
and she took them to court. She took the school to court, and basically the court ruled, okay, well, look, this is a protected religion, so she shouldn't have been expelled, right? Mm. So that's how it came to be that part. But anyway, this judge has said, well, look, we're not going that far, however, and they're basically saying, look, there's no legal basis for an exemption on the use of marijuana for your religion just because you use it as part of your religion. Mm. So you didn't come up with enough of a legal argument, so we're not going to go there.
Yeah, now, currently it's illegal, is it? Are the laws quite strict about marijuana?
Yeah, well, it's smoking marijuana is punishable by a fine of up to the equivalent of $2,000 and up to 10 years in prison.
Oh, wow.
Now, whether they actually, you know, impose those levels of charges, I'm not sure, because the one thing about this decision that was made by the judge was he did say at the end of it, and I don't know if this gives the Rastafarians hope, he did say at the end of it that we need to discuss, you know, marijuana and drug use in Kenya, and the debate needs to be had. So it's one of these things that we see all the time where judges are always kicking it back to the parliament and saying, listen, this is up to you guys to make legislation around, and maybe there's room for a debate in society around this thing.
Okay.
Now, the Rastafarians, or at least their representatives, are going back to court. They say they're going to take it to the Court of Appeal, and we'll see where it goes from there. But for now, the couple of thousand Rastafarians in Kenya will not legally, at least, be able to smoke marijuana.
Okay, well, that's not a there's only a couple of thousand in Kenya. That's not
apparently
a huge amount.
There's not that many in the world, really.
Yeah.
The estimates have it at around 700,000 to a million people. Most of those are in the Caribbean, obviously, where it is legal to smoke marijuana in a few countries. So Jamaica, I think, legalized it for Rastafarians in 2015 or 16, around about that time.
Okay, so it has happened in other parts of the world.
It has, yeah. But cases have been brought in the USA and the UK, but they haven't been successful.
Yeah, okay. It's as I understand, it's not a great religion for women. It seems to be part of their religious belief that women do all the work.
Yes.
While the lads are sitting around combing their dreadlocks.
There is an element of that.
Spliffs.
Yeah, there is an element of that.
Well, it sounds like a great religion altogether now. Right, so Algeria we're going to go to next. And a tragic story, a foster home fire.
Yeah, this is a story in Algiers, in the capital, obviously, where 11 people died in a fire at a foster care facility. 19 others were injured in the blaze as well. It appears that the alarm was raised early in the morning. Firefighters came to the foster care facility at about 3:30 in the morning. They got it under control after about 3 hours. But at that stage, obviously, we had the 11 victims. Now, we don't know for sure the ages of all the victims, right? Although Algeria's president did say that children were among the dead. And initially they weren't sure what caused it, but it seems that a few days after the event, a preliminary investigation has discovered that it was started by an electrical spark from a faulty air conditioning unit. Would you believe such simple things, really, at the end of the day? But in tandem with this story is the fact that Algeria, like Southern Europe and the rest of Europe,
yes,
obviously Algeria is not that far away. is going through a massive heat wave at the moment.
Yes.
And they're experiencing huge amounts of fires. So there's been something like in the course of a week, there was nearly 1,000 fires were recorded, specifically in North Algeria, okay, where which is mountainous and has the most amount of forest. Now, they don't have much scrubland or forest in Algeria, full stop. There's only about 2% of the country, or less than 2% of the country, is covered in it. So you can imagine, like, the fact that there's nearly 1,000 fires there is quite something. So very difficult for them to deal with.
Yeah. So I would imagine that even though it was seemed to be caused by an electrical spark, that may, in the midst of a heat wave, that makes that kind of a fire that much more difficult
absolutely.
To extinguish.
And because they're, you know, they're short of resources as well, because they're being deployed elsewhere. So sad story indeed. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. The UK we're going to go to now. And private schools are offering 41% more tree cover. You better explain what that means.
Well, they do. Well, they're not offering. They offer, apparently.
Right.
So, it's a bit of research that was done by an individual called Lewis Winks, okay, who's an environmental social scientist. And he published this research, and then it really caught on. A lot of newspapers, The Guardian, as you'd expect, The Independent and various outlets covered it. And what he found is, as you said, that private school grounds in England have 41% more tree cover than state schools, okay? Mm-hmm. And the analysis was very interesting the way that he did it. So basically, he took two maps, right, and he put them together. He took a map of every primary school and secondary school in England, and then he compared tree cover within 100 metres of those school sites using government woodland data, right? Because he wanted to see, okay, do posh schools have more green areas?
Okay? Yeah, okay.
And it turns out they do, as we said already, 41%. Now, even among state schools, he dug a little bit deeper. Those with the highest free school meal eligibility, which he used as an indicator of deprivation, had 29% less tree cover than schools in wealthier areas. And even when he went outside of the cities, rural schools had 23% more tree cover than urban schools, but deprived rural schools still had less.
That's interesting. But there's a bang of pointing out the obvious, really, about this, I would have thought.
Why'd you say that?
Well, because, you know, the richer the school, the more grounds and you know, leafy avenues there will be around it.
Indeed. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. But I suppose what he wanted to do was, and the timing of the publication is interesting, because obviously the UK, kids go to school for longer than they do here.
Yes.
So there was a heat wave.
Yeah.
People
yeah.
were, you know, there was reports of, you know, towels being put on kids' heads and them taking off their shoes and dipping their feet in, you know, in cold water and the like. So the timing of it was interesting. So I suppose what he was doing here was he was using the data to underline a point that he probably knew he was going to make, if you know what I mean.
Yes. particularly in the midst of a heat wave, as you say. Right, the US and this is an a famous Mexican drug kingpin. Mm. Has he been arrested? Or?
He was. Yeah. He was arrested, and actually, well, let's start at the beginning. So about 2 years ago, this is the former head of the Sinaloa cartel, who we've mentioned a good few times on this particular slot. So this is a guy who's Ismael Zambada Garcia. He's known as El Mayo, and he was arrested 2 years ago in the United States. Now, he was actually lured into that arrest by a colleague of his, Joaquin Guzman Lopez, who's not El Chapo, but the son of El Chapo. Okay, one of the... So El Chapo had about 15 kids, right, that we know of.
Wow,
right?
Okay.
And Joaquin, there's about four of them who were active even after El Chapo was gone in the Sinaloa cartel, and Joaquin was one of them, right? But he got caught by the United States government. And obviously he had to do something to try and make his sentence a little bit shorter, right? So he gave up his former colleague, El Mayo, right? So he lured him onto a plane, basically. El Mayo thought that he was going up to North Mexico to look for clandestine plane landing site airstrips, okay, that he was going to meet Mexican government officials up there. And instead he found himself being arrested in Texas, okay, after 40 years on the run. Finally, he's given up by one of his former colleagues. And so that was fine. And the American government had always denied involvement in it. They said, oh, nothing to do with us. He just ended up here. We don't know how it happened.
Mm.
But it now seems that they were very much involved. And we know that for two reasons. Okay. One of them is absolutely ridiculous. So the first reason is because there was an investigation done by a media outlet in Mexico called Pie de Nota. And it basically came across documents which said that the FBI had successfully executed a highly complex, what they called a highly complex, secretive and daring arrest of two of the world's most wanted fugitives. And they called it Operation Air Kings. Now, this would have been fine had that document been sealed away and they just came across it because they're good at journalism.
Yeah.
But it actually turns out that basically a copy of this document was actually in an air museum in New Mexico. It's called the War Eagles Air Museum. And the document was beside the plane that El Mayo was taken on from Mexico to the United States. So this air museum was boasting about the fact that they had done this, and it was basically explained on the little caption that goes with the display. So the FBI in this museum seemed to have been bragging about it all the while the government was denying that it ever happened.
Yes. That's bizarre.
So it's a really bizarre thing.
Yeah.
I've put it on my Instagram. You can have a look at the plane and the little caption with it as well.
Yeah.
I've done a terrible video, but anyway, it'll give you an
idea. Well, has it been established that how the Air Museum found out about this?
Well, they obviously knew about it because the FBI had done it, and somebody inside in the Air Museum said, hey, we should put a display about this. Now, I don't know for sure, but this is obviously what happened, and there was no communication between the FBI and the government.
Yeah.
Or at least the FBI department down in New Mexico. So it's caused a bit of a storm. And as we know, relations between the United States and Mexico are not brilliant at the moment. So we're waiting to see what the response will be from the Mexicans. So far, it's been fairly mute. Claudia Sheinbaum, who's, of course, the president of Mexico, she said that they had to look at whether there was a violation of sovereignty. Now, clearly there was.
There would have been FBI agents operating in Mexico.
FBI agents, apparently, from their offices in El Paso, were in Mexico and were organizing it and were operating in there.
Ooh.
There's always been a suspicion that there's hundreds of them working in Mexico. So
Turkey stroke Egypt. We're going to go to now. And this is a cruise that was stopped from docking.
Yes.
I don't want to be unsympathetic, but quel surprise, you know.
Okay, this is specifically an LGBTQ cruise ship called the Scarlet Lady, okay, which was on a 10-day cruise sailing from Athens to Venice, right? And one of its initial stops was to dock in Turkey, right?
Yeah.
But as they were getting there, and actually not even getting there, but getting into Turkish waters, they were told, no thanks, we won't be having you, right?
Yeah.
And the local authorities gave an explanation saying that the vessel had been chartered by, quote, groups known for behaviours that are not in line with our social structure and moral values. Right?
Yeah.
Now, that's according to their social structure and moral values. But technically speaking, same-sex relations in Turkey are actually legal, and they have been since 1858.
Yeah.
However, they are frowned upon in many parts of the country. So they couldn't go to Turkey, so they had to go to another place, and they said, okay, well, we'll go to Alexandria in Egypt until they discovered that the Egyptians had also said, we don't want you here either. So they couldn't go there. So there was quite a bit of dismay. I got a little bit of coverage, as you can imagine. Eventually they had to go on to Crete, and I think they finished up in Montenegro on Sunday. But as you can imagine, they weren't happy about
Has this particular, LGBTQ cruise, had they docked in Turkey before?
Well, they had. So the head of the organisation, Rich Campbell is his name, the CEO of Atlantis Events, the travel company. He basically said that they had chartered cruises to Turkey 13 times over the last 25 years, and they had never had any problems. So they're curious as to why this has happened. They actually asked for help from the US embassy in Turkey as well, but they failed to reverse the ban. So, you'd wonder what sort of changed.
There is an undercurrent. The political temperature at the moment in Turkey, you would imagine it wouldn't be your first port of call, for that kind of a cruise. Right, so what should we look out for over the next week?
Yeah, a few things coming up. Tomorrow, Nicolas Maduro is due in court in New York to face charges. Whether he turns up or not, I don't know. I think the last time he was in court for a hearing, he didn't show up. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. Friday, Donald Trump is attending the rescheduled White House Correspondents'
After
Dinner.
After the previous attempt
on his life. Absolutely. On the same day, the Strokes have a new album out. Are you a fan of the Strokes, Sean?
No connection between those two events, really, I would have thought. I heard that the other day from someone who said, I thought they were dead. Anything else?
Sunday, then, the Tour de France is over.
Good stuff. Jonathan, thanks a million, as ever.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.